the way that artists are gonna, in particular, visual artists, are gonna have to push back, and are already, is by not selling the product, but selling the process, and saying, it's not so much about the painting I made, it's about the act of watching me make it. Because when you watch me make it, you know it was not AI. And they said, that's probably gonna be increasingly the only way that artists can even, you know, survive and earn a living. Did you see this giant squid fan art contest?
I saw.
Did you see the winners?
No, I didn't. I haven't checked.
I know what, this is... it's awesome.
Was it today?
Yeah. Like, I know that doesn't look like much showing the camera, but...
That's pretty awesome, yeah. But I love... like an 80s animation TV show.
I really love poster. Yeah, it does. The third place winner is, I actually think, my favorite.
Really?
Yeah, it's always...
I have to see them, like, for real, instead of on your phone, through a screen.
Yeah, I know, of course. It's a terrible way to show it. It's just I happen to be looking at it.
Why do you think that? Because just from those little seconds that I saw, the first one looks more dynamic.
I mean, the first one is amazing. It's a poster type image for sure.
Right.
What I like about the third one is I've always thought it was cool when fan art gives a perspective that we never actually see, but is sort of naturally compatible with the world. So, like, I'll make up an example. In the original Star Wars, after they escape from Tatooine on the Millennium Falcon and they're heading towards Alderaan, not aware that it's been destroyed, we get that scene where Obi-Wan is trying to train Luke how to hear the Force and listen in, or he's using the lightsaber on the little remote that is target shooting, and that's the iconic moment, you know, where the Alderaan is destroyed and Obi-Wan says, it's as if 1,000 voices cried out in terror, and then silence, or I'm misquoting the line, but it's essentially that. And, you get the impression they're on the ship for hours. And so, like, a great fan art piece would be, what else happened during that scene? We know a scene happened, or we know that they were there for a while, and just people exploring their imagination of things that happen off camera, but which are not invented, you know? It's a very small subcategory of types of fan art. You're not putting characters in new situations.
Mm-hmm.
You're just showing something that we didn't see. And that's that's the vibe I got from that third one.
I see.
You see the eagle and the hunter up on one of the towers up in the fourth plateau in the snow, and it looks like a moment
peaceful.
That's not actually in the game. Yeah, but it's could have been in the game in theory. I don't know. I like when people are creative, but it's like, I mean, I love all forms of fan art because it's ultimately a love letter, but this one where it's so much of a love letter because they're kind of finding the little cracks and putting themselves in there, as opposed to just taking something and going somewhere totally different with it, you know? I don't know. It's not related to anything, but it's cool.
How many submissions were?
I don't know. I was a little busy when they were doing the voting, so I didn't get a
and
chance.
And what was the prize, or what was the incentive?
It looks, I'm just giving a quick glance. It looks like there's maybe 20 submissions.
Mm.
Just a little thing that they organized for the Giant Squid Discord. I don't actually know. The winners get Steam copies of the Pathless, and, you know, they'll be featured in the Giant Squid social media.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah. So as I promised, I had a thought on what I wanted to talk about today.
I'm coming here with I have no idea. Normally we kind of say, shall we talk about bagels today? And then, yeah, okay, let's talk about bagels. And then 2 hours later we record about bagels. But today I have no idea. He saw something that I sent and he's like, Austin's like, we should talk about this And it was super random. So I'll let you explain. I just don't know why do you want to talk about this, but
yeah,
go ahead.
It's just, so there was this video on Instagram that I imagine was, I didn't actually look to see how big it had blown up, but I assume it was quite viral.
Yes.
Of a woman who was like, who basically was discovering that if you grow lemons on a tree, you can eat them like you would any lemon you buy in a store. And I'm obviously shortening it. I don't want to make fun of her. You know, I don't think it's fair to make.
Have to make fun of you. Just tell the story as she was surprised, because in the video she's like, please tell me I'm not the only one that you buy lemons on the store when I have a tree. Like, I have no idea. It was the same thing. She thought she needed to do something to the lemon tree. I don't know.
Yeah,
so
or something
that was the
happens
whole thing.
In, like, a factory.
She didn't know. A friend of her was like, why do you have lemons from the store when you have a tree? And basically that was the whole thing, and it blew up, and yeah, she's discovering that it's the same thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know, why do you want to talk about this? Really?
Well, I imagine the comments are full of people that are giving her shit for it, and I just wanted to make clear up front that that is not my goal, but it made me think of something. There's a famous interview, I think, with Charlie Rose with Carl Sagan from right before he died, where he was talking about this would have been in the mid-90s, like maybe 97, something like that. I can't remember the year he died, but it was around there, where he was basically saying that the more we enter into a world where people don't understand how the things work that they depend on to live their life, the more we will be under the mercy of those who actually do control those things and understand those. And he was talking about it in this general technological sense. He could see the writing on the wall with computers and with the internet, where the average person, you know, you're now a nice exception to this, having built your awesome PC. I think because you did that, you have a better sense on average.
And I'm going to build yours next.
I do kind of want one of my own, yes. You have a much better sense than most people do now how those work. Even without knowing how the individual parts work, you know, like how does a processor work? What makes it different from a GPU? What is the function of RAM? How does a hard drive physically work?
It's still a long way, but now I understand more than any other person like you, for example.
Yeah, like most people use computers and are completely powerless the moment they don't behave. And so so Carl Sagan was warning that there was going to be people who make it their job to know, understand that stuff, who would have power over everyone. And I think a lot about this idea of how much do we really know how things work? How much can we do things on our own? Because nothing in anything ever happens on its own. Every single thing that we do, and so I was thinking about it. It kind of crossed streams with this idea of I listen to a lot of podcasts and people and blogs and whatever of people trying to guess where the future is going to lead on account of AI. And the something I saw, I can't remember where I saw this, I've heard something along this line multiple places, was that they were saying that the way that artists are going to, in particular visual artists, are going to have to push back and are already, is by not selling the product but selling the process. And saying, it's not so much about the painting I made. It's about the act of watching me make it. Because when you watch me make it, you know it was not AI. And they said that's probably going to be increasingly the only way that artists can even, you know, survive and earn a living. And it just got me. I just was thinking, it's like those two ideas converged, where I thought, we live in a world where no one knows how things are done. And it's good if they do. Like, it's ridiculous again, I don't mean to be rude to this poor woman, but it's ridiculous that something so common sense would escape her, because just didn't think of where does all this come from? How does, and it, there's also something that I find, this is a little slight tangent, but there's something that I find unnerving by just assuming that if you buy it from a store, it had to have gone through all kinds of like factory processes and tests. And because I bet you part of it was also someone going, is it safe to eat? Because no like official person has inspected it and given it the thumbs up. And that really bothers me also, this idea that we need authorities to tell us what to do. So anyway, I just found myself thinking about the fact that I think that art in general is not really going to be what we've called art up till now, because it's going to have the same, it has the same problem. People don't know how it's made. And so, and since AI kind of swoops in and can outperform anyone from a product standpoint, if only by quantity, the process is now the art. And it's the same exact, I think music is going to be, if it's not already, in a very similar boat, you know, like,
yeah,
there's, I have composer friends that stream on Twitch while they write as a way to just show the process. I personally would rather die than do that.
I figured.
I like making videos to share about the process after the fact. And I've obviously done that for years. But yeah, anyway, I wanted to get your thought on the idea of art literally is not defined by the piece anymore. It was just a, like, it was one of those where watching that video caused this domino of all these subsequent thoughts down that road. And it reminded me of this podcast I was listening to recently of about this exact thing, that the process is the piece, which means, I think it means two things. And then I'll shut up because I want to hear your thoughts on all this. I think it means two things. It means that the process is the only art that matters, or like is the only art that's sellable. I shouldn't say that matters, but I should say it's the only one that is probably sellable in the traditional sense. It also means that people who do art in a more kind of like workman way, you know, like I make a graphic designer or simple like poster art for, you know, like the... like not for something prestigious, but you know,
right.
Like I need a poster for my garage sale that I'm going
right,
to do
right.
or what, you know,
yeah,
like
carts, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
All that work is gone. Cause that's not a thing anyone would ever care about the process. And so it's like, well, AI may as well just do all that anyway. So, I think that's sort of like two versions of the same idea, but two possible places that that's going. And I'm not making this an AI discussion. It's more just the idea of the... I'm fascinated by the idea that what we call painting won't be necessarily what people 50 years from now would call painting. Painting to them would be the act of watching someone paint, not
right.
a painting on a wall, maybe.
Right.
Does that strike you
definitely as... Definitely something that is going to be more interesting, obviously. And if you want to validate the work, of course, you have to see it in progress. Because now it's hard to, like, it's so funny because I saw on Twitter the other day artists trying to just pointed out the like, art, but they are so well done, it's hard to believe that was AI. But they were circling in red, you know, like, the little mistakes. And it's so frustrating to think, do I have to be a Sherlock now to understand that this is not real, that this is not made by a person? So yeah, you just basically remind me that situation.
Well, I would actually say that it's in a sense worse than that, because I think that the mistakes are temporary. Those will go away. You know, the whole concept of it
and
is it, that it learns.
Like you see those paintings and it's actually like really, really convincing. It's very well done. But yet you have to zoom all the way in and then see like some things don't make sense. And even they circle something like on the roof, there's snow, but it kind of like doesn't make sense, but it kind of does. So it's like weird. Like it's something that a person would, without understanding, would do. Even,
right.
So I don't know. It's pretty, pretty sad, honestly. I don't know. I don't know. It's all a big confusing pile of material and.
Well, but what if what I'm saying turned out to be completely true, and basically I said you can completely and totally make a living as an artist.
I got my first taste. I'll let you know. January 2017, back in MacFest, the first time we did the
Dialogos.
Dialogos, and somebody was like, I'm gonna buy this painting, not exactly because of the result, but because of the story that was contained in the the different stages. They liked seeing the different steps and the colors changing in the painting rather than the final product. And I liked that. I remember feeling, wow, this is actually really, it's the first time somebody point that out. And it's actually pretty fun. It's the show itself. It's not exactly the final. And I hate admitting this, but this is exactly what's happening in social media as well. Like, reels now are domaining all content, and if I post the final photo of a painting that took me 100 hours, it's gonna get 50 likes. It's pretty frustrating. And then if I have footage of those 100 hours, pretty sure it's gonna do better. So gotta, you know, get on it and evolve with it, because
that's essentially what my question was. Do you see that evolution as a bad thing?
No, I don't see it. I'm just lazy. I'm not a videographer. I'm not an editor. I'm an artist. I just want to make art, take a picture, share it, and with that post, I want people to see it and understand that I made that and say, ooh, that will be nice for a gift. I'm going to buy it for my living room or whatever, and then make a living out of it. And that's it. That was the golden days of fucking social media and Instagram. And now it's a competition, a TikTok competition. I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. Composers went through this exact same thing, not the social media aspect of it, although I'm sure, I mean, especially if you're talking about writing music for film or games, that kind of thing, we're always in a little bit of a different camp because we're not dependent on anybody. Like, I have plenty of composer friends that are very successful that don't even have any social media accounts. Like, it's not, because it's just unrelated. They don't care. So it's a little bit different, obviously, in that regard. But the evolution part where you just say, I'm just lazy. For basically all of human history until the 80s, to write orchestral music meant, you know, one of these and a bunch of this. And then hoping you would be lucky enough to get into the room with a bunch of live musicians and that they would play your music. And it posed all kinds of challenges to learning the process, because how do you learn something that expensive? It's like when you watch these crazy, you know, like BMX bike guy, like extreme sports guys, where they leap off a thing and they flip and they spin and then another. And I always just look at that and go, I can't fathom how you learn something that dangerous, because jumping 10 feet doesn't feel like, you know, little baby steps don't feel like they're actually teaching you much, because it's so different. I obviously am wrong, because that's the only logical way that could be learned. But similarly, you know, it's hard writing for yourself to play piano. It's just simply not the same thing as putting music in front of an 80-piece orchestra and hoping that it's a coherent thing. So for all of human history, that is what writing, particularly orchestral music, was. Set aside, you know, the emergence in like the 40s and 50s and 60s of the notion of the rock band, and everything offshooting of that, electronic music, blah, blah, blah. But just for the vast majority, it was this. And there are people, those who kind of came of age, like if you were 40 in 1980, actually, case in point, John Williams, who was almost 50 in 1980, he basically saw this new approach that computers were adding and was like, I'm too old for this shit. And here we are 50 years later, or, you know, 44 years later, and he still writes pencil and paper and almost never uses sort of technology himself directly. Mm-hmm. I mean, his scores are obviously recorded with state-of-the-art technology, but he relies on his team for that. Point being that...
he's an anomaly. I don't think any composer... Like, it's just rare. It has to...
I think he's an anomaly.
Can you name another person that can live like he did? That can...
There's almost not... There are a few that are of his generation that don't use computers the way that I do. But they are nowhere near as popular and in demand and iconic. And so they just work less as a result. Because,
right.
You know, for example, famously on The Force Awakens, John Williams was told... You know, I don't know exactly how this went down. I heard about it secondhand through people, but they basically said, you're not willing to do mock-ups, right? And he was like, I don't even know what that is. I record the orchestra, and that's how we do it. And that's when you hear it. And right. So J.J. Abrams and the Disney people said, okay, fine. So what we're going to do is spread the recording sessions out like one per month for 6 months. So that if we need changes or the movie's re-edited, you have another session coming down the road where you can do it so that
fix it.
You don't have to do mock-ups. And wow. That's but the thing is, for any other composer on the planet, they would have just said, no, you're going to do mock-ups. The crazy thing is they doubled the specialness of that because they also, all Star Wars had always been done, London Symphony, and, you know, 5 out of 6 were recorded at Abbey Road. And that would have been, I assume, his preference. But he was like, I'm not going to fly once per month to London to do this. So we have to record it in L.A., which he prefers these days anyway. Like, ever since 1984 or 5, he's almost never recorded in London, except for the Star Wars prequels in 99 and onward. So he obviously prefers recording in L.A. anyway. So Disney, you know, who had done no Star Wars had ever been done in L.A. All Star Wars from that point forward was done in L.A. because of John Williams not wanting to do mock-ups. And that had a side effect where, you know, Rogue One is recorded here and Mandalorian is recorded here. And like Natalie came and did Obi-Wan here and it caused a bunch of work for the for all these musicians, even for other composers unrelated to John Williams. Pretty nuts. In any case, all that said, there's definitely a generation of composers that were like, there's some that the ones that exist at the turning point when the thing shifts into something new and they go writing music. It's not just that you need to let me describe it in this way. It's like stages. The oldest generation is told you have to adapt. There's a new method of approaching this. And some reject it, some don't. And those that reject it kind of disappear. And then there's the middle ones, which is the position we're in, which is we started one way. And we're like, I guess we have to evolve because it's basically how it... Mm-hmm. We have more of our career ahead of us than behind us. So we should have to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that motivates me is because we're not just seeing it as evolution. We're like, this is a viable way to work.
Experimental by nature.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, this is an interesting approach. But then the younger generation, they just start that way and it never even occurs to them to try otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So like an artist who's 15 right now and is going, I want to paint for a living or I want to do something along this line. It doesn't even occur to them to not make a TikTok account and to do all that stuff. They don't even think of it as something other than that because that's what painting is. But to me, that when I think of it like that, I go, well, then I am okay with evolving in that way. If it's something that a young person would just assume, it means that there's going to be people that then get creative with that and go like, ooh, I'm going to come up with all kinds of really inventive ways to showcase the process that's just evolution of the art form. If that's a gift that AI and the broader technology of the world making us not know how things work, if the byproduct of that is that we have to not only show how it's made in order to get any kind of traction, but then that itself becomes its own creative exercise, that actually strikes me as a kind of cool thing. Like, that's actually a really positive side effect. Maybe that's just my taste, because I love seeing how things work. And I love seeing how people... I love hearing artists talk about their process.
For sure. I do, too. I know that it's more attractive to see... to watch a little clip of how something was made and just seeing the final thing. Like, that's for sure the way to go. And I enjoy it as well. And that is what I get, actually, in my feed. I don't see anymore any photos, posts of art. Like, it's impossible. And I do follow a lot of artists. I've been, like, basically filtering my account just so I get to see art in my newsfeed, and yet I still, it's all about reels. Some of them are art, some of them are just shit posting, you know, like, it's still hard to get out of that. But yeah, there's that. I guess I have to surrender. I have to become a fucking content creator, because yeah, it's the way to go. Like, the social media is, for me, my channel, my way to reach people. And if I don't push it, I guess I'll be, you know, stay behind and nobody will see anything. And that's not the point.
Have you ever tried, like, the very old, it's now very old fashioned, but it's probably in a way more reliable, this like an email newsletter kind of thing?
I do have one.
Why don't I get it?
I don't know.
What the? How often do you send out emails?
I'm not spammy. And actually, you remind me that it's been a while. But yeah, I sometimes share, you know, like a little code for my store, you know, like a 10% off or something.
Right.
But I don't spam that. I have it there very, for things, you know, once, twice per year.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's good to know, because I feel like, especially, I don't know if I'm right about this. I don't know if the data would support this, but it seems like there is a bit of a trend away from social media in general. Like, I find, maybe it's my generation, the ones that were in college when all this was started. So we were like exactly we were the age of the people making it, basically. You know, the Mark Zuckerbergs are the same age. And so we were right there on the front lines. Like, I remember joining Facebook when it was, I think, probably literally months old, maybe a year or less. Like, it was, because it was only for university students and only on the East Coast. Because it was Ivy League schools, and then I was at NYU. NYU was the first non-Ivy that they added. And it was like this cool social club. And then, obviously, all the rest piled on. There was this whole notion of, like, people are very addicted and blah, 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 blah. But then, you know, like, if I go back and I look up people I went to, or, like, actually a better indicator is I get these Facebook memories that are, you know, 15 plus years old, and half the time the people I'm tagging, their name shows up with no tag because they've shut down their account since then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I see that a lot. I feel like more and more I see people that go, you know, this isn't adding anything to my life, and it's like there was that initial 10 years of infatuation with a new toy,
right?
And then this idea of actually, I don't know, which makes me think the newsletter is actually, like, gonna be the thing that survives. It's like the cockroach that survives the apocalypse. Because that's still a really good way. Like, I get tons, and I read. I get, there's some that I get that I actually am very interested in. You know, and it's a better way to reach me in so many ways than tagging me or relying on me seeing it on. You know,
everyone's different, but yeah, I get it. I understand.
But you see that too, right? You see it. It seems like generally.
Or maybe they just hate us and they deleted us. they blocked us.
I mean, there's always that, and there's also the this idea of the idea that we are seeing less engagement because we are less engaging. There's always that possibility.
That's
as well.
True. Yes.
But I do. It does seem like there's just a general fatigue from it all.
Oh yeah.
And again, maybe that's only true for people in our general age bracket, but like younger people are just as into it. But I don't know.
It's true.
I'm not sure.
We're
either
old,
way,
Austin. We have to accept it.
I turned 40 this year. Very
yes.
Excited.
No, you're very young still. You have the soul of a 20-year-old. The energy. The body, I don't know. Are you still...
I'm actually...
You know, with pain in your back and stuff.
Well, that's probably going to be forever because I damaged my back as a teenager, but...
Oh, my God.
But I've been working out pretty aggressively, and
good.
That... I'm probably right now back to, like, the body of a 30 to 35-year-old.
Nice. Oh, look at you.
Because when I was in my 20s, early 20s especially, I was in excellent shape. At least anaerobically, I was in excellent shape. I've never been good with the aerobic, like running a mile is much harder for me than sprinting at maximum speed, where I could get quite fast, or I could lift a lot of weights, but I couldn't go jogging, you know, like.
Interesting.
So sort of strength versus endurance was always where I landed.
I'm the other way around. I rather, you know, play for an hour Beat Saber than lift weights for 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So then that way I think I am trying to, I don't know, I just, the last couple of years I was like, I really actually feel, it's a classic, everybody as they approach 40 starts to really noticeably feel that things that used to be easy are increasingly not. And I don't lie. I always felt very physically strong. I could lift heavy objects and things my whole life. I was lucky. I inherited my father's general
athletic. That is
athletic.
Lovely to hear, because I just packed the shelf that I need to return. And I hope you don't get hurt.
It's super heavy.
Because it's heavy.
Yeah.
It's pretty heavy. Yeah.
But yeah.
New shelf here.
I know. You make your area so nice.
Thank you.
Anyway, so yeah, that's the long and short of it. I just found myself thinking a lot about the change of the art itself. I mean, look, if you want to be extreme, I actually was saying this 10 plus years ago, before the AI thing had exploded, there was enough signs that I didn't refer to it as AI, I referred to it as algorithms. But I've literally been saying, I'm sure you can find interviews with me online from a decade plus ago where I said it could be that by the end of this century, you know, literally 80 years from now, 75 years from now, that the definition of composer is more the author of an algorithm than anything that we would identify as being a composer today. That it'll be so technology driven that it doesn't require anything beyond typing into a computer or maybe even speaking. And I wasn't even talking about this notion of the so-called prompt artist. I was just saying it might be that computers, we automate so much of the process and so much of our preferences that we can, it's turning the machine loose.
Yes.
And I said, but I don't know that that's a bad thing. It's just where
it
goes.
I don't know if it's a bad thing. What I know is that there is not going to be soul to those products.
But see, that's the same thing people say about making electronic music and making, you know, computer driven music. That's
but
what the people who were
electronic music, they still are involved in the process. They are what? Pushing the buttons. I don't know.
That's the thing. Pushing a button to open a circuit and make a square wave.
But they are
play.
Along the way. It's not that they're just prompting, you know, nightclub music. Go for it and just go grab a coffee
But that's not actually what I meant. Somebody who's just saying, create something generic, and because I asked you to create it generically, I am now the composer. What I mean is, if I were to train an AI on how I write for strings, and then I were to say, give me 41 seconds of violin moving through the key of E flat that then becomes F minor the way I would do it. And then the AI gives me 50 versions. I haven't done anything except input, but yet I did create something. And especially if you assume its training is based on something I also created. That's just a new way of creating at that point.
It is a new way, and I don't know where to draw the line, but it seems like if you do something like that, you are kind of like preparing your palate to do something else to it. It doesn't seem like you have the 50 versions and then you pick one and launch it. It feels like you have something else going on and that you're going to pick that one and do revisions and then do it again and then add something else. And that to me is more valuable, obviously, than just prompt once and then leave and then go get something and post it.
I mean, also, to be clear, I agree with that. There's a definite difference among those. I just try to zoom out and go, what would the kid born in 2040, who then is 30 in 2070, and they take all this for granted, plus things that don't exist yet. Like it just, they don't think of it as controversial or, and then say there's someone who's really creative. Like they are an absolute genius. Like there will be those people. So how would they look at this and want to use it? That's where I go, let's skip ahead with our discomfort and go, what would a genius do with this? And can we kind of like try to catch up to them ahead of schedule, you know? That's where I get excited about it, where I refuse to be afraid of it. I know I'm kind of changing the topic. I'm just saying that I'm not sort of intrinsically afraid of the art evolving because art has always evolved. You know, music.
I think you're mostly curious.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's true. I mean, look, we've talked about this a little bit before, although we don't know if we've talked about it here. I think I'm 70% or 75% very curious about the future and eager to go live on that frontier. But there is 25% of me that will put on a suit and go to the opera and really relish in the idea that there are people dedicated to preserving something as it's been done for hundreds of years. Like I think yesterday was the 200th anniversary of the premiere of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. And so there were a lot of posts on all my classical music feeds that I follow about Beethoven's Ninth. And there's part of me, a good solid 25% or 30% that feels passionately about these arts that people have built and cherish preserving them. I wouldn't want to live in a world where we go, fuck Beethoven. It's all about electronic music or it's all about AI or it's all about like, there's a very big part of me, even though it's not the majority of me. I would say I am solidly 70% forward looking. But there is strong component. The other thing I'll add, and then I'm done on this, I promise, is just as a side note, I think that I imagine are similar, but you tell me. When I think ahead to maybe putting prompts into algorithms or AI in the year 2100 will be just the normal way that all artists create. Even if that's true, and even if I think that's exciting, and let's say I'm on board with all that, I personally take great joy in looking at the viola and going, if they play this on the D string, they can access the E flat a little bit more conveniently, and then I could even put a double stop there, but I just have to give them time to shift positions. And like all that nitty gritty stuff that the AI and all that stuff is promising to automate for us and take us away. First off, I don't think you can automate subjective decisions that are just like, do I want red or orange? And that's what a lot of that comes down to. But I like that. I like writing music. I like the whole point of this being the dream job is I like getting in there and doing this stuff. In the same way that someone saying, you know how much more productive you could be if you use these tools? And you go, but I want to have a palette in my hand and a brush and paint mysteriously on the back of my elbow in ways that the physics don't make sense. That's the thing that I'm on board with, which is, again, I guess that brings us full circle to, well, then the art is less important than the process. Share that passion. Share that you actually really enjoy.
The passion, yes, the process. I think, well, personally, yes, I think it's more valuable to enjoy making something than just, you know, typing a little thing and getting the result, even if the result is amazing and it gets all the views and it goes viral and you get paid a lot of money, I think it's still empty. I don't know. But every person is different and they might feel happy with it. But yeah, I'd rather work for it and just have my little process and feel the texture of the paint and the different materials that I can combine than just typing something on the computer and let it work for me.
You know, now that you say that, it actually makes me think it could also, if we try to think multiple steps ahead, right now sharing the process is the thing. But then maybe that will then become saturated at some point, and a Banksy type would become the model of, like, you're not going to know anything about me. Like, because right now there's that, that's not the majority of artists, obviously. Most go out of their way to promote their work and their ideas. But maybe that would be the interesting kind of pendulum swing of, you know, all art became sharing. Can't I just see somebody who just, I don't even know about them. They just say, here's my work. I don't know how that contends with the fact that AI and all that would still be a thing in that time. But here's a thought. Here's a challenge for you. Tell me if you like this idea. I found myself thinking about Diálogos because you brought it up. And have you ever thought, have you ever watched like live streams with like Q&A where like a podcaster will have a guest, and because they're live, especially on YouTube, there's super chats where someone pays like $10 or $5 to make their chat appear, like the see their messages get featured. Have you ever thought about doing a Diálogos kind of like that, where you go every 5 minutes, I ask someone their interpretation of what I'm like, so like a super chat, someone paid to support me. What do you think, what is your interpretation of this piece? And then you take their interpretation and you start intentionally putting it in the painting to bring their idea. And then 5 minutes later, okay, who's next? And it ends up being this collection of
this
your
collective
brain. Yes. Yeah. But it's like at intervals, so you can work in between, and it's not just like chaos.
Right.
But it,
and sounds fun.
Feel like that could be interesting. It's like a twist on Diálogos of sorts, but you're actually the other partner is the audience.
That, we kind of did that, but not in intervals. We just asked the people, give us three words, and then we worked with it.
Right, like a prompt.
But this seems more like interactive in real time.
It's exactly what I'm doing when we're performing together, because I'm looking at it and going, what do I think this is? How do I represent it in music? So if you just say to someone, what do you think this is? And then you run with that idea. I just think it's interesting because it will take, in the spirit of the art is the creation. It takes a painting somewhere. It's pure you, because you're still reacting to their comment. But nonetheless, it's adding something to the equation.
The twist of the flickering ideas of the chat.
Yeah. It's like, it's almost like, this is a really weird analogy, and it's not a great one, but it's kind of like if you make a beautiful sculpture that's a fountain and people are flipping coins into it, the reflection of the coins becomes part of the sculpture.
Uh-huh.
You know, people have added to it. And they're actually
exciting.
Made a contribution. I think that could be a fun a twist on, it's like audience Diálogos.
Yeah, that sounds nice. I should probably get back to work on the commission that I have to do, but that sounds really cool. And I might try it after.
Yeah, we should do it. Everyone who's watching will come find us on the social media we use less and less. And tag us and remind her that you're excited to watch her stream a Diálogos with
Diálogos. My goal is to get back on Twitch. I'm doing a terrible job right now because I turn on the computer and I think in the morning, should I stream today or not? And then I get, you know, I have two dogs, I have to clean the house, and then I have to make lunch, and then, you know, breakfast and give them food, and then pick up the shit, and then The day comes by so fast, and you know, finally I'm ready, and it's too late, and yeah, another day will be. But no, I do want to get serious on Twitch and share my process for sure, and that sounds fun. I definitely will take it.
I also like the idea of you making paintings, like playing games on Twitch, and anytime something fun happens, creating a painting to capture that moment, you know? Even if it's just a small one for fun.
I said that sometime on Twitch. I remember.
Yeah, I love that. Just because I pictured, like, your dramatic moments in Helldivers or something. Now you got to play Hades.
Imagine. Oh, my God, yes. Oh, my God, yes. Yes. It's so pretty.
Excuse me, it really is.
I'm a little funny on my nose, but...
All good. Anyway, that's all from me for today. See, I told you I had an actual thought regarding this woman and her lemons.
I think it was too big to bring this lemon woman to the conversation, but it was a good point.
It's what triggered the chain reaction of it's. It was just the starting position.
Right. I hope she's doing well. I feel bad for her.
I hope she's enjoying all the lemons on her lemon tree.
I know, right? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I really hope so.
I certainly am grateful to have that as well, having never had that before.
Yes.
My mother grew tomatoes, I remember, that were freakishly gigantic.
I want to have tomatoes. We eat tomatoes like every day. At least I do.
Oh, yeah. No, so, I love tomatoes. Yes. I hated tomatoes as a kid. I don't remember why. They just, for some reason, they horrified me.
I used to eat them like apples with salt.
Denethor.
Oh my God, yes. Yes, yes, I was so disgusting. Oh my God. So anyway, good. Well, this was fun. I don't even know. Do you have a nub?
How about that singer?
Britney Spears.
Yes, Amanda Palmer. I remember her... She was one of the first, like, really kind of big, completely self-distributed solo artists, if I remember correctly. She, part of how I think she kind of went viral, or however you want to describe it, if memory serves, was that she was sharing the process. And that was novel. That was, people weren't used to that. And
that's cool.
So,
what is her music? What kind of music?
I think of it as kind of like alternate. It's like non bubblegum pop is how I would describe it. That's probably a very bad way to describe it because I think of her as more edgy, like New York style.
Oh,
you know, like she's not Britney Spears. She's the opposite of that, but she's not jazz in my mind. I don't know her music that well. I just remember it caught my eye because I'm always interested in people who are innovative. And she was always playing with the idea of how do I involve the audience directly? Like she was, I think, one of the first to do a Kickstarter campaign for the funds to do an album. Like she was one of the first people to use that platform for that. And of course it went really big because this was totally new. Like we're talking about 12 years ago, something like that. So yeah, I haven't listened to her music in ages and I don't know. Oh, that's so funny. Apparently she got engaged to and now has kids with Neil Gaiman.
Wow.
I didn't even know about that. That's funny. Yeah, see, according to Wikipedia, her genre is alternative rock or dark cabaret. That's more accurate. That's what I was looking for.
Well,
when I was
interesting.
I think it was Theater is Evil. That's the name of the album that she did on Kickstarter in 2012. I'll send you the link for it. So there you go. That's my reaching back into my memory at the idea of somebody who sold the process as much as the actual piece itself.
Nice. That's a good one.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you for your time and your knowledge and your point of view. This was fun.
Likewise. I am going to go turn the AC on. You're welcome for leaving it off while we record. But I am literally Below where the camera stops, I am just pure liquid T-1000.
Oh my god, yes, but I don't have to edit that much, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Con mucho gusto. Hooray! Bye! Wait.